Well, good day to you. It's Joel with For King Country dropping in to let you know that our brand new film, Unsung Hero, is in theaters now.
It's Luke here. We've teamed up with the creators of Jesus Revolution to bring you this adventure of a lifetime. It's a powerful, true story about a family uniting, growing in their faith, and facing the impossible together.
In theaters now, unsunghero.movie for more information.
Rated PG. Parental guidance suggested.
I really didn't want to go because I already felt crazy and I didn't want something like therapy to solidify that. Like, I had such a prejudice against it. It was the single best thing I could have ever done for myself and the single best move that glorified God the most in my life.
Are you ready to talk to me? My name is Deborah Falada, and I'm a licensed professional counselor, national speaker, and author. Through my blog, books, and podcast, I have the privilege of helping millions of people get healthy mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally. The purpose of this podcast is to have on-air, authentic, counseling-style sessions where we talk about how people are really doing and give my guests and callers an opportunity to talk to me as a licensed professional counselor. Each of these episodes is meant to show you that we are all on the journey of healing, mentally, emotionally, spiritually, and relationally together. None of us are immune to the challenges and struggles of life, but we don't have to walk this path alone. I'm so proud and honored to be having these conversations with men and women who are courageously paving the way for open and honest conversations about their personal journey of healing. So if you're ready, let's talk. I'm so excited to be talking to Ann Lynn today, a little bit about her story and her journey of healing. And it's so good to have you with us on the podcast.
Oh, thank you for having me here. I'm
so You're a brave soul, you know, doing this and just honestly, the vulnerability that it requires to be a little bit more authentic and to share something a little bit deeper. And so that's kind of where we want to dive today. But before we do, I want you to tell us a little bit about you. Who are you and what are you all about? And just for people who might not know anything about you, give us a little snippet of who you are.
I guess you can call me a content creator as my full-time job. I do a lot of interior design and DIY projects. I also weave a lot of mental health and faith topics into the visuals that I create. And now I am a new author and trying to dive into that skill set. So
that's awesome.
That's kind of what I do. Yeah.
You know, you and I have very similar jobs in organizing the world around us. You know, what you do with exterior space, organizing and getting rid of the old and analyzing what's not serving me anymore that I've just carried for too long just because it's the same of what we do with our inner world. You know, what's no longer serving me? What served me then, but now it's sabotaging my life. And sometimes when it comes to organizing, you make a bigger mess first in order to put all the pieces back together. And I think that's one of the things that scares people when it comes to counseling. It's like, I don't know if I'm ready to open all that up and just bring all that forth, all that pain, all that hurt, all that trauma. And it's like when you start organizing your pantry, all of a sudden your kitchen is a disaster and people are afraid to sit with that. But the pain of living with those burdens and the pain of living with the disorganization and dysfunction is so much harder than the work of putting it all back.
Yes, absolutely.
So we do have a lot in common, right?
Yeah, I love the way you thought about that. And that really reminds me of the concept of the demolition, which is kind of the introduction part of the book where I talk about how at first, when you're in this construction site of your life, the chaos might seem so severe and like just so totally beyond repair that you don't know how it could possibly ever get better.
Right.
But if you are in that position, then it means that you actually have a chance at creating something completely new, something better for yourself that doesn't resemble, you know, the old structures of the past. So it's exactly like what you said, where the pain kind of has to happen sometimes if you want to have a new paradigm shift in your life.
I love that. So let's talk about demolition. And I'm sure without even trying, we're going to have a lot of these analogies, because like merging our worlds and figuring out how to take the trauma and turn it into something beautiful. Tell me about a time of demolition for you. Tell me about a time when you weren't okay, a time that you looked around your life and you're like, all I see is rubble.
Oh, yeah. So this was after I met Christ already.
I'm glad to hear that. Yeah. I'll be honest, because it normalizes the fact that coming to Jesus doesn't magically fix it all. Mm-hmm. Coming to Jesus doesn't make us all of a sudden healthy. Coming to Jesus doesn't mean we're not going to have rubble that we've got to put together. So I'm really glad that you're starting us like post Jesus in your life.
Yes. I typically go back to my testimony, but when we're talking about a true demolition, I was unraveled. My faith and all became unraveled after I came home from college. This was already like 5 years or some into 4 or 5 years into like knowing Jesus. And I had major expectations for life and for God. You know, I thought that coming home would mean that my mom and my relationship with my mom would be magically repaired and that everything would just be smooth sailing, because somehow now I have this college degree that would make her proud and would make everybody proud. But that's kind of not how generational trauma works. You know, it doesn't just disappear just because of one good thing. So as life would have it, I came home to a once again chaotic household. I would be faced with a lot of verbal abuse and just a lot of emotional manipulation. And it's not like my mom knew what she was doing. She was just perpetuating the cycles that she endured. And so I just got to a place where I felt so distrustful of all of my authority figures. I couldn't turn to my pastors at church because things there got a little verbally abusive as well. I couldn't turn to my mom, obviously. And I just felt like I had nobody around me that I could trust with the chaos and the burdens that I had. And my friends weren't equipped for that kind of counseling either. I got to a place where I almost denounced my faith. I thought that if these people that I trusted to protect me in my life would turn against me like this, surely God was no different. And I had a really hard time separating my view of him versus my view of his followers. And it wasn't until my friend actually forced me to go to therapy. Like, he drove me there. He waited in the car and did not leave until I had my first session.
Wow.
It wasn't until I talked to someone who knew what to do with my pain that I was able to slowly make sense of the chaotic feelings that I had, learned how to self-validate, and eventually come to feel safer in the presence of Jesus. So it was all thanks to my first therapist.
I love that. You know, it's amazing how much of our pain we transfer onto the face of Jesus. Mm-hmm. We see him through the lens of our own hurts, you know, and we take that and we transfer it onto him. And when we're looking for those things, we're going to see them. Mm-hmm. But they don't belong to him, right? It's all this stuff from our past. So can I make the assumption that none of this was new for you as far as like the verbal abuse and the manipulation and that type of chaotic environment in the house and your relationship with your mom? Like, can you tell me a little bit about what that looked like pre-college? Because clearly coming, maybe for you, you're like a little distance, a little time. Maybe I'm a little bit more mature now. I have this degree. I'm going to jump back into my life at home and hopefully things will be different. And they weren't. Mm. What was it like, you know, growing up?
Well, growing up, my experience living with her was completely different because my dad was still alive. And when he was still here, I was always recruited onto her side. It was like we were like a team. And I didn't know until much later that was called triangulation, but that was what my entire childhood looked like. I felt like we were best friends. She could never do me any wrong. She always had my back, always defended me, and I always defended her. It was like me and her against my dad. But then when he passed away, when I turned 12, and that was also the year right before high school, I believe, everything changed in our relationship. Suddenly, she became hypercritical, and it just seemed like she hated me. And of course, now in retrospect, I kind of have a greater understanding of what happened. I mean, she was suddenly left with a brand new mortgage by herself, not speaking the language, and now a single mother. So she was highly stressed. But at the time, as a 12-year-old, I was so confused, and I felt like my entire world was shattered because now my best friend in life hates me and was constantly telling me how much of a burden I was to her, and was just, things also became very physically abusive as well when I was in high school. I mean, I wrote all about the mental breakdowns, the weekly breakdowns that I would witness, self-harm, everything. And this was like a complete 180 shift from what I knew.
So the mental breakdowns that she would exhibit.
Yes, yes. I had never seen her break down to that extent before, and let alone at that frequency. So I was constantly in shock in high school. I never wanted to be home. And so I ended up hanging out with the wrong friends, met the wrong guy, and kind of just was attracted to the same type of people in my life. People who were hypercritical, who were manipulative and abusive. And so before I knew it, my relationship with him turned very abusive as well. And that was when I truly wanted to give up. And I didn't have God in my life. Mind you, I didn't have any faith to subscribe to. I was pretty much an atheist. But after that toxic relationship, I just thrusted myself into any house parties I could find, any substances that I could find, I would numb myself with. And at this one particular party, I remember being so high and drunk and on all sorts of things that I couldn't even feel the weather. Like I was physically numb too. And then once the house party ended and we all got kicked out, I remember stumbling into the stranger's car, and then the car filled up with all of my friends. And then we took off into the night, and he started blasting really loud techno music. So nobody was paying attention to each other. And there I was in the backseat, just sobbing, just having this come to myself moment where I realized nobody truly loves you. And it hit me like a ton of bricks. But just as soon as I had that thought, I saw in my mind's eye this painting of Jesus that my mother erected in our childhood home. And when I saw that painting, I felt this comfort just wash over me from my head down to my toes. And I'd never felt that kind of comfort before. So that was what got me interested in Christianity. I was like, what was that all about? And I told my Christian friend in high school, and she brought me to her home church, and I just fell to my knees and gave my life to Christ during the first sermon that I heard.
Wow. So this is all like around high school.
Yeah.
So
very formative years.
So this makes the demolition post-college even more significant. It's because, well, now I have Jesus. And I'm going back into this environment. I have Jesus. I have a degree. I have all of these things. And I'm going back into this environment, but I'm met with the same old thing.
Right.
And that is a big trigger. It's yeah. like, here we go again. Like, so what was the point of all of that? Like, Jesus is supposed to change my life. Here I am again in the same old situation with the same old mom. The difference was you.
Mm-hmm.
The expectation of her changing, though, was like mm-hmm. not realistic, right? But it's mm-hmm. when you're in that moment and you're like, Lord, why isn't this changing? And then you start to kind of blame him, like, okay, you know what? Maybe this stuff isn't even real.
Yeah. Yeah. And if it was real, I didn't want any piece of it. I was just so traumatized. And it wasn't just my mother. I'm not going to blame it all on her. But for some reason during that time, like everyone in an authority position in my life were very stressed out. Like the leaders at church were going through like a merger. And so they weren't fully being themselves. And a lot of, you know, aggressive terms were thrown around, and I was working for the church as well. And so I saw a lot of the underbelly that I didn't expect to see.
Right.
And it made me feel really disillusioned. I didn't know what to do with all the information that I had now about people and their flaws. And all I felt was just this unraveling of my reality as I knew it, you know, like, who is God?
Right.
Who are Christians? What are parents supposed to be like? And I just wanted no part in any of these relationships.
Yeah. You know, I think those wounds can be even more painful, because if you think about, I call these things triggers, and triggers are essentially mm-hmm. when you've got an emotional sore spot, like a black and blue mark, you know, when you get a black and blue mark and it's painful. And, you know, I recently had a black and blue mark, and I tell the story of how I was leaving the house and I hit my shoulder on the coat rack and it left a black and blue. And then later my husband came to give me a hug and pushed on that black and blue by accident. He didn't know it was there. And I reacted like,
wow,
like, get away from me. That yeah. hurts. He didn't cause the sore spot, but he pushed on it. So now I'm imagining you with a sore spot of manipulation and childhood abuse and triangulation and all of these things. And then you go to this church and maybe they didn't cause the sore spot,
mm-hmm.
but they're pushing on it with the same type mm-hmm. of interaction. And I wouldn't be surprised if that was a big trigger for you.
Oh, yes. I had my first mental breakdown during that time period. All throughout high school, I never even had one. I might have had like panic attacks and anxiety attacks, but I never had a mental breakdown like proper until then. And I felt like a duplicate of my mother. I didn't know how else to behave. I didn't know how else to regulate, or I didn't know what to do with all of these big feelings that I had.
When you say mental breakdown, like, what does that look like?
For me, oh God, it just feels as though it's like I black out and I start acting like a child, like a big toddler. I start having these crazy tantrums that of rage, really. And I don't know how else to describe it besides blacking out and not really knowing what you're doing. But there's a lot of screaming. There's a lot of, you know, unintentional self-harm, just trying to get the pressure out of my brain. In those moments, I feel like there's so much pressure in my skull, I don't know what to do with it. So I end up just like hitting my head on things just to get the pressure released. And that's what I witnessed my mom doing too. Yeah. And it was so scary. And I couldn't believe that now this narrow pathway formed and this is how I cope as well. And I didn't know how to stop. It was terrifying.
Wow. You're right. You're just seeing, I don't know what else to do with this. And this is what I've seen. And mm-hmm. your body just starts replicating that. So is that the point where your friend was like, okay, we need to get you some help?
Oh yeah. I think he was like one of the last friends I had left. I mean, it's scary to be around someone who doesn't have control of themselves. So I, you know, thank God that I had that person in my life to push me toward something he knew would help me heal. I didn't believe in it because there was such a stigma against mental health at the time, especially in the church, nobody sought therapy at all. Probably not one person. So I really didn't want to go because I already felt crazy and I didn't want something like therapy to solidify that. Like I had such a prejudice against it, but it was the single best thing I could have ever done for myself. And the single best move that glorified God the most in my life was to just find ways to truly, I guess, address all of the wounds that I didn't know I had.
All those sore spots.
Yeah, all the sore spots. Know where the black and blue spots are, like you mentioned, so that I don't blow up on people who didn't cause it. And I didn't know that was possible.
Wow. Is there something in your life you want to change? I sure hope so, because healthy people are always on the trajectory of learning and growing and healing. Maybe it's your negative thinking that's keeping you stuck. Maybe you find your emotions are overwhelming you with fear and hopelessness, shame, anxiety, or depression. Maybe you're struggling in your relationship with God. Maybe you're stuck in a pattern of unhealthy relationships. Maybe it's behaviors that are sabotaging your life, like an addiction or unhealthy habits. It could be your attitude, your mindset, or your perspective on life that needs to shift. Whatever it is, in order for change to happen, it has to start from the inside out. Taking the best of psychology and pairing it with God's word, my book Reset is all about getting healthy from the inside out. It's a book of 31 mindset shifts and sustainable practices that will guide you into the process of healing by giving you practical steps that will transform your life with change that lasts. No matter how many times you failed before, I want to help you do it differently this time. So grab a copy of Reset today and get ready to reset your life from the inside out. Check out DeborahFilleta.com/reset or grab your copy anywhere books are sold. So take me back to those days. Like you're, first of all, I just need to reiterate, you are a Christian. Okay. You have a relationship with Jesus and you are having a breakdown and hitting your head against stuff because you're just so overwhelmed. I want people to understand that this is reality for so many people. Like you can be a Christian and feel like a complete mess, feel like life is crazy, feel so overwhelmed, feel out of body and not know what to do. Like these are all normal parts of the journey of emotional and mental healing. And so coming to Jesus does not make us immune to these things, just like coming to Jesus does not make us immune to getting the flu or diabetes or cancer or all of the things that our bodies are susceptible to. Our mind is susceptible to the same thing because of trauma.
Right.
And so I just want to reiterate that because it's important for people to understand that this, we're not talking like testimony and then you came to Jesus and everything was amazing. We're talking about the work of sanctification, which is really the work of healing.
Yeah.
So you go to that counselor. What are some things looking back that you had to learn to face, to heal, to address during that season of doing some of that internal work? You were learning to that pressure in your skull. You were learning to release it in healthy ways. So what did that look like?
Yes. It was so funny because I, when I first met with her, the first couple of sessions, I remember she kept reminding me of how riled up I was when I was telling these stories. Her eyes just got wider and wider, the louder I became. and I remember her saying, I could see how, I could see the anxiety that you have right now, just reliving that. And I was like, oh, anxiety. I didn't even know that what I was feeling was anxiety. I thought I just ascribed my entire like behavior to my personality. Like I thought this was just who I am now. I'm just a bad, you know, crazy person, bad friend, bad daughter. And like, you know, I didn't know that my emotions were separate from myself, and that I had control over them. I just didn't have the tools to do that. So I think one of the biggest lessons I've learned was boundaries. My internal framework was non-existent. Anybody could come in and out of my life. Anybody could have the deepest access to my soul and then leave the next day. There were no boundaries at all. And I felt like that was what love was, that the more you love someone, the more comfortable you should let them be.
Wow.
Which means that, you know, for me at the time, it meant that it had to be intense or else it wasn't love.
Right.
And that kind of mindset and that those lack of boundaries caused the deepest issues in my relationships. And it wasn't until my counselor finally just said it point blank to, she suggested that I could possibly move out of my mom's house, that I was like, what, you know, what do you mean? Like, that is so disobedient. Like, even someone as bad as me wouldn't do something like that. That's what I thought.
And how old were you at that time?
I was 20 something. Like, yeah. This was after college.
Yeah.
And because she was a single mother and, that was lorded over me for so long by my entire family, I felt this blatant, pressure to be her spouse, like to just be there for her forever.
And you had that role in a way for a very long time. Like when we talk about triangulation, what we're really talking about is when a parent brings a child up to their level and in a way they replace their spouse. So it could be in a family who the husband and wife don't have a good relationship. So the wife brings in the child to kind of be her on her team. Mm-hmm. It could be a husband and wife where one of the partners is sick or not emotionally available, not physically available. So they bring the child to kind of meet some of those needs. And when you get triangulated, you automatically fail to establish boundaries because you think this is your role. My role is to help you feel good. My role is to be here for you no matter what is going on. Mm-hmm. This is what love looks like you said, to be there unconditionally to support you. And even in marriage, there needs to be boundaries, you know?
Oh, yeah.
But even more so in parent-child relationships and so for you, it's like, wait, boundaries? Like, you want me to disrespect her and how's she going to react to that? And so that was, you know, for you, for someone who had been triangulated for so long, even the thought of shifting the dynamic of your relationship with her felt disrespectful.
Yes. I thought that my therapist just didn't understand my culture. You know, she was a Caucasian lady. And I just thought, you just don't get it. Like we don't do that in my culture. You know, we stay regardless of the abuse.
Cultural background?
Oh, I'm Vietnamese, Vietnamese and a little bit of Chinese. Mm-hmm. But yeah, in Eastern culture, it's so collective. And of course, there are a lot of pros to that too. But the downside is that you don't have an out when there is abuse. The expectation is just you grin and bear it.
Right.
Until you can't take it anymore. Then something really bad happens, you know,
Right. Which
it does very often. So I thought that was just my life, you know, to just take care of my mom and until I can't bear it anymore. But it planted a seed in me. It was a brand new thought that I hadn't give credence to before. So I just kept thinking about it. And every time I would have a run-in with my mom, I would think about the possibility of moving out. And before I knew it, I was open to it. And I remember bringing that up to my counselor. And she said, she gave me this analogy of a cat and mouse chase. She said, up to this point, you've just been chased around this pole. so to speak. And I just felt so icky, like framing my mom as a predator, but I just went along with it. And she said, "That's what you've been doing. You've been chased around this pole. And what do you think will happen when you stop, participating in this chase?" And I said, I don't know. I get eaten. And she's like, "Well, before you get possibly eaten, she's going to slam into you, right? Like the cat is just going the same route. It's always known it's going to slam right into you. So when you set this first boundary with her, expect blowback." And I'm really glad that she kind of prepped me for that, because the blowback really did come when I suggested maybe I should find my own place. There was a full on tantrum, you know, like kicking the floors, everything, like a toddler. And it was terrifying because she was a grown woman. She was my mom. So I just had to stick with what I had said, no matter how difficult it was. No matter how much she, you know, protested, I just got to stick with that decision. And calmly, I just, you know, try to smile and empathize and go back into my room. And, 2 weeks later, I found a place and moved out, and it was the best decision I've ever made for myself, but also on behalf of my relationship with my mom.
Right.
Like that was exactly what we both needed to stop having our triggers, you know, set off.
To get out of that cat and mouse cycle.
Yeah, exactly.
And the reality is you can't change her.
Yeah, I didn't know that.
You can change you, which then influences the dynamic of the relationship. So I'm not saying that relationships can't be changed, but we don't start changing the relationship by trying to change the person, because that's futile. We start by changing me. I'm an ingredient in this relational dynamic. I have an ingredient. If I change my ingredient and mix it into the bowl, it changes the entire recipe. It changes the outcome. It changes the interaction. It changes a lot of different things. When I start setting boundaries, it changes things. So I can't change you, but when I work on me and changing how I do things, it changes the outcome of the interaction, and that person still has to work on figuring out how to change them. And, you know, sometimes God allows it when the recipe starts to change, the other person realizes, wait a second, I need to do things differently. And I have seen times when one person changes what's on them, it influences the other person to also begin to shift. That doesn't always happen. And sometimes we have to just work around that and have healthy expectations, but sometimes it does change the dynamic of the relationship, which then influences that other person to do things differently. And in a way, it sounds like what I'm hearing you say is that it did have an impact on your mom. When you moved, there was some distance there. She couldn't rely on you and triangulate you and have that codependence on you. Mm-hmm. So she had to figure it out without you, and it almost forced her to look around and say, okay, I need to do this differently. She's not here anymore. Anne's not here. So I have to figure this out on my own.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, it was, I mean, I love that analogy. Thank you. The whole like ingredient changes the whole recipe thing. It's exactly what happened. And I didn't know it until I lived it. And it was so clear to me that I was the one who changed. But my change really influenced our dynamic in the end. And it really did force her to figure out how to be joyful and fulfilled all by herself. And I think I realized a very strong connection between codependency and hyper independence. Like people in my life who were codependent weren't like that 24/7, you know, like they swung from being codependent to feeling rejected or abandoned and then going into hyper independence mode where they say they don't need anybody.
Right.
And it just keeps going back and forth. So at first she did swing into that hyper independence.
Like, oh, you're leaving me? Then I don't need
you. Exactly. Exactly. Like, I don't need anybody, you know?
Right, right.
Don't come home for anything.
Right.
And it's like, okay, but I think I got lucky in that eventually she did find a happy medium where she started working out a lot. And I guess all those new endorphins really helped because she started becoming a lot more emotionally regulated whenever I would talk to her.
Hmm.
And I still couldn't, you know, spend more than like 3 hours in her presence without it going back to being, you know, unacceptable. But at least now there were some tools that she had in her life to cope with being alone.
How hard was it for you not to swoop back in and save her? How hard was it for you to not just pick up that old role of, okay, I'm your pseudo spouse and what do you need and how can I help? And, you know, like, cause there's the physical boundary of being in a different living space, but then there's the emotional boundary of realizing I can't fix this for you, even though the temptation is to swoop back in. How did you navigate that?
It was so hard. I mean, it wasn't just in my head. It was a tangible pressure that was put on me from her, you know, like I would get phone calls like crazy sometimes and then absolute silence during other times. And during those calls, they were always crises. They were always emergencies. And it's just so manipulative, you know, like she was living in El Monte and this is a city full of like stray dogs and people just let their dogs walk themselves all the time. And so every time I got a call from her, it's because she got mauled by a stray dog or she's in the hospital already for something else. And it caused me so much anxiety. I didn't know what to do with it. My friend said, just don't pick up. But of course, I didn't know how to just not do that. I couldn't live with myself for not doing that at the time. So I always picked up. And then I think it just got to this point where I had to tell her to stop. And I was surprised I never did that before. I would say stop in indirect ways, like, why are you doing this? Blah, blah, blah. But I never just said stop.
Yeah.
And I said exactly that, almost in English. I said, Mom, can you please stop? I'm not going to pick up anymore if all you talk about with me are crises or of people dying. Like, I can't handle this like life of emergency that you have. Everything is always so urgent, you know, it causes me so much stress. And I was just honest with her. And of course, it was met with some defensiveness, but she actually implemented a lot of the things that I asked for when I was very direct with her. And then slowly but surely, she became a little more positive in our interactions. She would call me for like good news instead of just bad news.
Right.
And because she listened to me, I kind of rewarded her with more quality time. And so that really helped to just be direct and to just face whatever consequences that would come from being direct.
What's interesting is she had her emergency alarms always going off, right?
Yeah.
And to understand her better, we have to realize that she's probably been through her own amount of trauma and her body responds by always being on high alert, high alert all the time, high alert, high alert, high alert, bad things everywhere, bad people, bad experiences. This could happen, that could happen. It's like constant high alert. And when somebody you know and love and are close to is living in high alert, it is hard not to allow that high alert to rub off on you.
Mm-hmm.
It's like their alarms are going off. It's like, imagine a fire alarm.
Yeah.
If you're living next to somebody who's literally constantly fire alarming, it's going to affect you. You can't just sleep through it, even when you know it's a false alarm. Sometimes it's not. Sometimes it is. Sometimes it's not. It's like the nervous system is constantly firing. Mm-hmm. And it's really hard to be around that and try to find your own inner peace, yeah. your mm-hmm. own regulation when they're not regulating their own nervous system. And so I like what you said about having to have those emotional boundaries and limits, but also being direct with what you need. The other thing that I think is important for you to understand about boundaries isn't just what you tell someone to do. Mm-hmm. If it was just that, we would call it control. Don't ever call me. Don't do this. Don't do that. That's great as a suggestion, right? Mm-hmm. But you can't implement that. If you figured out a way to implement that, that would be control. A boundary is, here's my need. Here's my request. But the boundary is what I'm going to do in response.
Exactly.
Right?
Like, if you don't want to meet that need, here's how I'm going to meet that.
Right. I will not be able to visit you as often. I will not be able to pick up the phone. I can tell you, don't call me at 2 a.m., but that's not a boundary. The boundary is me not picking up the phone when you call me at 2 a.m.
Yes.
Because I can't control what you do, but I can control my boundary, how I respond, what's good for me, what's healthy for me. People are always asking me, where do I find a good counselor? At the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, we want to help you navigate through any difficult season you might be facing. We want to help you find relief from the pain and stress of the present and healing from the wounds of the past in order to find freedom, joy, and peace in the life you're living today. Our team of trained, licensed professional counselors will walk by your side and give you the tools you need to face any personal or relational issue you might be up against today. With an integrative approach, we'll guide you with truths from God's Word paired with the best of modern counseling and psychology to help you get unstuck and live freely. There's no better time for healing than today. Book a session with one of our counselors at deborahfalada.com/counseling and get started on your journey of healing from the inside out. The other thing I like about this story so far is you watching you learn to love from a distance. Mm. I think some people believe that to love, like you said, is no boundaries. So therefore, distance means no love.
Right.
But there is such a thing as loving from a distance. Mm-hmm. We only bring people close as they earn that trust, as they show responsibility and emotional health. Then we can bring them right up close. We can love them super close. Mm-hmm. But it's the ones that aren't showing reciprocity, that aren't being trustworthy and responsible and giving and taking emotionally and showing emotional health, that we have to kind of push away. It doesn't always mean cutting people out of your life. I think sometimes our generation is black and white. You're either near or you are gone. But that's not always the answer, especially with family. Sometimes the key is just learning to love at a distance.
Mm. Yeah. I totally feel that. I mean, it took me a while to learn that too, but once I did, it was so liberating. I mean, the calm and the quiet that I felt in my own apartment for the first time.
Because there weren't alarms constantly going off everywhere.
You're right. Yeah, that's exactly what was happening. I didn't know what true peace was when I was living under the same roof, because her anxieties were so loud.
Yeah.
And it was impossible to create my own sanctuary within that environment. And so when I left, this quiet, you guys, like, it was, it's so inexplicable. And I still know what that feels like in my bones. And I have moments of it now, and I'm just so grateful to have that quiet in my soul.
And it sounds like as there was more space, there was more healing, because you're not constantly putting out fires. Yeah. You actually have the bandwidth now to turn in and be like, oh, what do I need to deal with? What alarms are going on inside of me that I've been quieting because her alarms are so much louder? Now that I'm not putting out her fires, what do I need to tend to? in my own right. soul? What do I need to care for? What do I need to heal?
Yeah.
And like, it sounds
like, who am I apart from her influence? You know, I didn't even know who I was anymore. And it was really exciting getting to discover my likes and dislikes outside of her influence. I discovered that I am girlier or more feminine, and that's okay. You know, there's no shame or like vanity associated with just wanting to lean into my femininity.
Yeah.
And it was just a beautiful time of self-discovery that God allowed me to have. And I think that was truly the beginning of real changes in my life when I moved out and removed myself from that human alarm, yeah, as you would put it.
So two questions for you. First, I want to ask how your relationship with her looks like today. Mm-hmm. Second, I'm curious to know how those sore spots are today, and what does it feel like to interact with people when they don't say the right thing, do the right thing, maybe act out of aggression, because we're all human. People are going to mess up. I don't know. Are you married?
Yes.
Okay. So maybe your husband would be a good example, because he's going to at some point say something stupid, right? That's how that's what happens when you're
that's
married.
That's how husbands work.
Like, we all mess up. And I'm curious how you've navigated those sore spots when he's pushing on something. But let's start with just where you're at with your mom right now.
Well, me and mom have come such a long way since I moved out. My relationship with her now is the best that it could possibly be, I believe. Every time we see each other, we have genuine joy seeing each other, and we know exactly when to go home.
Yeah. What's the limit?
On her end too. Yeah. She knows what the limits are. We have like a greater pulse on the other person's limits now. And it started when I moved out, but it got a lot better as well when I decided to extend this olive branch of retiring her early. I saved up enough money to just help her with the rent money and the bills so that she could get out of survival mode. I remember what she was like prior to my dad passing, and she didn't have nearly as much anxiety. And I just wanted her to know what it's like to thrive rather than constantly staying afloat. And I thought, you know, since I have the resources, I'm going to see how this affects her and our relationship. And wow, I think that almost like saved her life. Like I think it almost, it gave her back years of her life. That's how I felt. She enrolled in a gym, like what she never did before, and got so much exercise, met new friends at the gym, was just always so positive and happy whenever I was around her. She, by the way, I would never do this if I felt like she was gouging money from me. She was never the type of woman to ask for anything. And so she truly left it up to me to give to her. And, so it wasn't out of obligation. That's why I could do it joyfully. But yeah, I think not having to worry about her next, rent payment, oh man, it just completely changed her as a person. And
it almost now that she wasn't putting out her own fires constantly.
Yeah.
She was able to stop and say, okay, what do I need to address? And what do I need to work on? And
Exactly. It's like she found her own quiet after I turned off that alarm, which I didn't know was possible. But yeah, that really catapulted us toward a more successful like mom and daughter relationship.
Yeah, it sounds like you each took the time to kind of turn in and figure out how to help yourselves heal instead of relying on the other person for healing.
Yeah. And I will say, like, even if she didn't break all of the generational traumas, it doesn't mean that she broke none.
Right.
Right. So I believe she really did when after I extended that olive branch and wrote her that letter and telling her the good news. And she like gave it a few months to sink in. She actually did something so gracious. She extended me and my husband her life savings as our down payment for our actual forever home.
Wow.
So it's just amazing how the person who I felt the most unsafe with at home in my childhood home somehow found a way to give me my future safe house with her life savings. You know, it was like the ultimate kind of redemption, I feel.
That's amazing.
It wasn't about the money. It was just the fact that she saved her entire life.
Yeah, in a way, she's finally caring for you.
Yes. Oh my gosh. For sure. In such a significant way. And not just for me, but for her future generations. Like,
right.
This house is going to serve her family forever, you know? So,
wow. Yeah. I bet that's why it felt so significant. It's like finally she's healthy enough to commit to the role that she should have had your whole life, which is I'm here to care for you.
Yeah.
Versus it was always you caring for her, you being there for her, you being on her team. And now she's finally like, I want to care for you. And that's really special.
Yeah.
I mean, talk about redemption. Is she a believer?
She is. She has more of a Catholic background, but she believes in Jesus. And
it's amazing what God can do in the most broken situation. Like, it's amazing what he can do. And if you would have just cut her out of your life forever, which you had the right to do, but you also had the right to learn to love her from a distance. And you chose the latter and got to see that change and that healing and that work. And sometimes people do have to just cut a non-repentant, non-healed abuser out of their life for good. But I also want to remind you that you have the right to love them from a distance if you're seeing them respond and change and respect your boundaries. And the key, though, is you assessing, how clear am I with my boundaries? How am I actually acting on these boundaries? Not just, well, I told them to stop and they didn't stop. Okay, but what did you do? How did you respond? How did you do things differently as far as it's up to you? And when you see that people are responding to your boundaries, it's a sign that maybe this is a relationship that I can learn to love from a distance and see what happens. Okay, so
it's so like case by case.
Yes, exactly. And that's why it is important to work with a counselor to kind of help you navigate what's safe, what's not safe, because sometimes your alarms can't tell the difference between what's safe and what's not safe. And everybody and everything feels unsafe, right? Tell me real quick, what does that look like for you now? Because the journey of healing doesn't stop, right? And these emotional sore spots, sometimes they take time to heal completely and no longer be sore spots. How have you noticed that come up in your relationship with your husband?
Oh, wow. You know, God bless my husband. I thought I was like, pretty much like all healed by the time we were married because our dating life was pretty, you know, stable after we hashed out some things. And I was like, oh, we're heading in the same direction, same values.
Yeah.
Not a problem.
Yeah.
Wow. Lots of problems. So the first problem being my trigger of feeling trapped. I didn't know that was a sore spot. And when I felt trapped, I went berserk. Like,
you mean like controlled or like,
oh, like, no, like physically trapped in a space or like trapped in a situation that I didn't want to be in.
Okay.
And I didn't know where it came from. Whenever we would have like conflicts that we couldn't work through and I felt like this was going to be my life forever, that was when the feeling of being trapped came. And it wasn't until I discovered EMDR that I was able to pretty much dull that trigger. Nothing else worked for me, not talk therapy or any, you know, self-regulation tools worked for me. it wasn't until I reprocessed a very specific memory where I really was trapped, you know, like I remember being like 7 or something, very young, very short. And my mom and dad just towering over me, screaming in each other's faces. And I was in the middle, like just feeling so trapped. Mm. And I was, where was I supposed to go?
You know?
It was a tiny house. I was 7 and I had just had to kind of stick it through. And I didn't realize how significant that memory was. But it has such a chokehold on my relationship, or yes, my relationship. But once I reprocessed that memory through EMDR, oh man, it was like night and day. It was like a miracle. I couldn't believe how much freer I felt in our marriage. Mm. Like now we could actually let things sit for a little bit and then talk through it again without me, you know, going off the rails, wanting to leave and doing all these, you know, more permanent things. But yeah, it changed my life. And now I feel like that bruise is it. I remember what the bruise was, but it doesn't hurt anymore. Mm. If that makes sense.
It makes total sense.
Yeah.
A marriage is amazing in that God allows it to shine a spotlight on our childhood wounds.
Yeah.
And whenever there's a big reaction, it's usually God's saying, I'm revealing something here that I want you to heal. I want you to deal with this. It feels like it's our spouse. And yeah, our spouse has a role oftentimes in these triggers that we go through. But the reality is, it's like God is saying, I'm trusting you with a deeper level of healing.
Right.
I'm exposing this. And for those of you who don't know, EMDR is a type of therapy where you go back and bring up some old memories that might be attached to things that are happening in the here and now, and begin to rewrite them, reprocess them, speak truth over them. I love to use the phrase truth over trauma in my work. It's like trauma is no longer my template.
Right.
Truth is. And so learning to recognize when I'm defaulting back to the template of trauma and living out of a place of truth, and it takes work. But it's amazing how this stuff can come up in your closest relationships. And I think that's the beauty of close relationships. They're safe.
Yeah.
And so God allows things to come up to the surface so that they can be healed on a deeper level. So thank you so much for sharing your story. This was just so hope-filled to know that such difficult relationships can be healed. Will they be perfect? Are they perfect? Not necessarily, but they're redemptively functional, you know,
in
such a good way. Like it's God has redeemed it and it's functional rather than dysfunctional. Mm. And I think the reality is in some relationships, we need to understand that the expectation is redemptively functional. Some relationships can be healed and restored and be amazing. And that takes a lot of work on both sides.
Both sides.
But in other cases, God can still redeem. It's just, it might not look like perfection. Like you still have limits.
Yeah.
You still know, okay, we've spent enough time together. We need to part ways. I better not pick up this phone call today because I'm not in a state of mind and I can handle it. And being able to navigate those type of relationships. And so I'm just so proud of you, Anne, for your healing journey and how you take the internal healing work and it overflows out of your life into beauty around you in your interior design and the work that you do in that. Tell us a little bit about your, you know, that, like what you're doing in that space and what does it look like and what you're up to?
Yeah, it's truly an honor and a privilege to create this kind of digital space where I can invite people into where they can feel at least safe when they are watching what I'm creating and feeling as though they have a friend to kind of share these stories with them so they don't feel alone. And so it's funny because I have like so many people online who know what the inside of my home looks like. And sometimes it could feel very exposing, but
right.
I also find so much purpose in owning a home that bought by my mother, who I could share with the world and help them heal. So I guess that's kind of what I do for a living, and I wouldn't want anything else. And if you guys are interested in finding out where to find that, you can find me at Girl and the Word on all of the social platforms. And I wrote all about this in my book, Forever Home, as well.
Forever Home, Girl and the Word. I love that. Yeah. And you can find her on Instagram and all socials, and yeah. her book, Forever Home, just digging into a little bit more of her journey. And her relationship with her mom, and just real life, you guys, yeah. the real life stuff that we have to navigate even as Christians. Just because you're a Christian doesn't mean you're going to automatically be escorted into complete emotional, relational, mental health. This is a journey of sanctification and healing. So thank you so much for sharing your journey with us, Anne, and, here's to a new level of healing in this season of life for you and your mom, and all of your relationships. Here's to a new level of healing from your sore spots, and God entrusting you with new things this coming year that He wants to heal.
Amen.
Thanks for being on here. Thanks for sharing your story.
Thank you for creating space. Oh, I'm so grateful.
Thanks so much for tuning into the podcast and giving me your time today. If you're enjoying what we're doing here, leave us a 5-star rating and review and help us get the podcast out to others. If you want to go deeper with getting healthy and making healthy relationships, go check out some of my books, True Love Dates, Choosing Marriage, Love in Every Season, Are You Really Okay, Married Sex, or my newest book, Reset. You can find more information about all of those, as well as hundreds of articles and courses, as well as the Deborah Falada Counselors Network, over at my blog, truelovedates.com, or my website, deborahfalada.com. I love connecting with you online, so find me on Facebook or Instagram at Deborah Falada. Send me a DM and tell me your story. If you have a question on your mind or a guest suggestion, reach out to me at truelovedates.com/talktome and let me know what's on your mind. I'm Deborah Falada, and it was so great being with you today. I can't wait to talk with you again next week. I'll see you then.